What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
I got pregnant by an inmate that I met off TikTok on our first visit. This is just a disclaimer. I don't need anybody in the comments telling me that I'm stupid, telling me that I'm dumb. Like, we all make mistakes. We've all done something like this.
First of all, I thought she meant we.
In French for yes.
Every time I substituted we with yes, it didn't make sense. Once I put my thinking cap on, I realized she meant we as in the English definition. Now we're going to discuss improper usage of the word we in the English language. We is actually not that hard of a word. I'm going to show you a trick for the word we. In order for there to be a we, there has to be a me. And you will notice we is just me flipped upside down. So the next time you decide to make a we statement, make sure it includes me. We're going to do a little exercise. If I'm in the we, remember, me. If I'm in the we, I will add myself into the circle. Statement number one, we all make mistakes. Have I made a mistake before? Yes. So I'm going to add myself into the circle. Statement number two is a bit tricky. We all done something like this. What is that something that she's alluding to? What is that? Let's break it down because there's five things that are included in this something. Five things. Meeting a man from TikTok being the first one. I have done this. I've actually met a man from TikTok. But let's change this statement. Not a man, but an inmate. I have not done that statement. Having sex with him on the first link. I have not done that statement. The sex being in a jail bathroom. I have not done that statement. Getting pregnant. Absolutely not. And with twins. Okay.
No.
So when these trick statements come up where it says we all have done something like this, make sure you break down what the something is before you put yourself in this we bubble. Because this we does not include me. So therefore, this is incorrect usage of the word we. So we really want to avoid this when it comes to future statements.
Welcome to another edition of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones, and I'm thrilled to be here. It is hot as freaking Hades out this bitch, and it's hot outside, y'all. It's hot. Be safe, family. Make sure you're properly hydrated. Make sure you're not standing in a wind tunnel full of hot air, meaning crack those windows if you got fans on. Make sure you have a free flowing system. Sometimes, you know, that helps to, you know, fight off this. Man, if you can't find no AC, fam, I feel sorry for you. But anyway, you know, and stay cool. This is a good day to get to the pool if you can. Just be safe about it, because we all know, man. Cats be carrying a blicky to the water. All right? So, this is Office Hours, and we're rocking live from the 215. This is another edition of the Philly Fridays on Fet Life Station at FetLifeStation.com. And you can also catch us, you can also catch us on the True Stories Podcast Network. That's the True Stories Podcast Network. If anybody that misses the live broadcast, you can always go there and follow up and catch us on the back end side. You know what I'm saying? You dig me? You dig me? All right, family. So what y'all just heard was like a measure of, was a response to an enormous level of unaccountability. You know, this whole notion that people can make mistakes because they're young, this, that, and the other. You know, after a while, you got that bird don't fly. And what you had earlier was the young lady who, I don't know how old she was, cause talking about she was, I don't even know how she met the guy in prison and had sex in a prison bathroom. Like, yo, like what the f-? Yo, like, listen. But we hear this all the time. And then we hear that, you know, niggas ain't shit. Ain't no good men out here. But this is where you looking for men. The prison bathroom on the first link. On the first link. But, you know, and the first thing you say is, I don't want to hear it. You know, basically, I don't want to hear anybody say something like, I told you so, or you should have known better. What's up with that? I mean, I'm really trying to figure out, like, why it is that that there's this, like, this is generationally focused curse of unaccountability to create these cycles. And, you know, for the most part, you know, pregnancies are down for the most part. The reproductive rates of all groups, all demographics is going down in this country. Nobody in this country, with the exception of Latinos, are reproducing at a rate to sustain their current population right now. But that being said, the recklessness that some people are doing and exercising out here, you know, I think, like, there are like 10, 11 different probes going on right now, or just recently wrapped up, where they're getting all these prison guards, and typically women, female prison guards. You know, I'm not saying the men ain't out here doing it, but they're getting these female prison guards, and these women are getting caught having sex with the inmates, sneaking in contraband, all types of shit. And we know prisons is a dirty game. So everybody gets somebody to sneak something in. But the record number of these women getting caught is preposterous with all this stuff is going on. But I digress. Because what we're going to do is we're going to go over a few clips here. And from these clips, you know, we're just going to react to some of the things that are on these clips. But then I'm going to drop one on y'all. So stay tuned, because what I drop on y'all is going to be very serious, and it's something y'all need to think about. All right. So check this out real quick. I want y'all to hear this. Let me turn this off so y'all can hear. You know, I'm down a screen because my computer situation, but
all men are killers.
It'll be back up soon. And as y'all heard us start off, listen to what she said again.
All men are killers. And this is an important thing for women to understand. You see, men were designed by God to be protectors. And in order to be a protector, you have to be willing to kill. And so that is a switch that all of them have. And so it's important that women understand that no matter how nice, how kind, how sweet, how nerdy, how short, how scrawny, how big, how thick, how rich, how poor that man is, all of them have this switch. And depending on how much they have to lose will depend on how easy it is to flip that switch. So while you might be thinking, oh yeah, I could do that to him, he's too nice, he ain't gonna do nothing. Or I could say that to him, or I could put my hands on, and what he gonna do? He might kill you.
And what she's referring to is, you know, just basically what's in a man's nature, right? And what's in a man's nature is violence. Violence, most, if you're a man, you have to be dangerous. Like, you don't, you know, you have to have the capacity and the restraint not to act in certain ways. But as a man, you have to be dangerous. And what a lot of women don't understand is I think they misinterpret a man's restraint for what a man is capable of doing with his bare hands. And you'll have women who aggressively punch people in the face. Like, there literally was a story of a woman going into a store recently. And I'm not going to look for it, but y'all find it. A woman that went into a store recently and got into a conflict with a man. She spit in his face. He shot her. She spit at him. He shot her in the face. You're starting to see a lot of males. And, you know, I ain't going to call men males. So you're starting to see a lot of males react to having their buttons pushed. The thing is, that's always been said was you don't play with a woman's emotions. And then you can kind of counter that, like, you don't challenge a man's respect or his ability to be shown respect. And I'm not justifying anybody put their hands on anybody. But what I am saying is, once you start that ball going down the road, once that rock starts rolling downhill, you pretty much are going to have to deal with whatever comes from that. Whether it's an avalanche, whether that rock falls harmlessly off a cliff, you're going to have to deal with that. And I'm not for the life of me understanding why it is that in this day and time, with all the access to the news and the media, global access to it, why women are still challenging men. And it gets worse. It gets worse because they do stupid shit like this. Hold tight. Hold on. Let me drop it down a little bit. It gets worse. Like, check this out.
Folks, we don't talk enough about how black women set their sons up to get killed. See, a lot of black women never had a father, never had a man to take them serious, never had a man to protect them. So when they have a son, they look at it like they got that man now. They got that protection now. They got somebody that'll always love them, that'll never leave them. That's why a lot of women, relationships with their sons be a whole different situation than the relationships with their daughters. So they walk around, they talk shit to people, they disrespect, they star shit, they immature. And the first thing they say, I have my son come do this, or my son ain't going to play about his mama, or my son to do this. And then when you smoked they motherfucking son, it was, oh, my baby didn't deserve that. My baby was a good boy. No, on Carter Grave, you put that shit in his heart. You got your son walking around thinking he the toughest motherfucker walking, and no matter what, his mama gonna always be there. You gonna bury his ass fucking with me.
And the one thing that she's talking about, and this is what we call black leashing, right? And child, like I said, Dr. Tia Sign Johnson, who's helping us put a, not just a narrative, but a vocabulary to a lot of the misandry that goes on. Because that's misandry. This is a misandrous way of acting, is setting your, or booking your son, as Sister Showers Dot Ali said, booking your son for a fight. Booking black men for a fight. Because it ain't always the son. Sometimes it's the brother. Sometimes it's the husband. Sometimes it's the father. And when it turns out, like, I did a story. I used to do a kamikaze report. Because every week for a while, there was stories out there about black men who were getting terminated because they were actually putting themselves in the position. Hold on, I'm talking too loud. I just realized how loud that shit was. Hold on. All right, you got to hear me talk. So I was doing stories about the kamikazes, missions that brothers was going on for the sake of a woman. And it was one case in particular that caught me because it was caught on film. And it was in Detroit. I'm not sure whether it was on Michigan Avenue or something like that. And this woman, she was going through it with a guy, and they broke up. and she brought her brothers to the house. So she's out in the streets while her brothers are trying to, like, first they're at the door talking to old boy, and then the next thing you know, they're trying to push in the door, and then after that, you know, hold on, because I got something for everything. After that, you... And next thing you know... Left those boys out there starched up like a shirt pressed for Sunday morning service. You know, all that, they don't play about me. They don't play about me. And then what I've often found is when that happens, I've rarely seen the women show remorse. The remorse they show, the crying they show at the funerals, because they don't want to get blamed for the catastrophe. All right. And so, hopefully brothers get wiser. And I've seen some situations where brothers, even fathers, have gotten wiser, you know, in dealing with situations like this, where the fathers will tell their daughters, if you call me, I'm calling the cops. If you call me, I'm calling the cops. And then typically what happens is the daughters will try to talk their fathers out of calling the cops. They'll just ask them to show up. But the fathers are like, if the situation is what it is, then I'm calling the cops. If you don't want me to call the cops, I'm not pulling up. And I think a lot of us have to get into that mindset, because life is too short. This ain't about no bullying. And this ain't this. You know, sometimes our egos and our pride get in the way, and you know, basically we'll die. We'll put ourselves in the line or in the line of fire for the affections of a woman. But if a woman puts you in that position, does she really care about you? Does she actually care about the fact that bullets fly both ways? And nowadays, that's what everybody's doing. So, you know, it's just another one of those situations and circumstances where we as men have to be on our square. Now, I got one more clip to show y'all. And all these clips are just random clips. Excuse me, do I have one more? Do I have a couple more? Let me just talk. Yeah, I got one more clip to show y'all. And, or to share with y'all, excuse me. And then we're going to get into, you know, we're going to get into what I talked about before. So, I want y'all to check this out, right? I want y'all to check this one out because this is also a reaction, but... This is why a lot of times, brothers, I tell y'all, go about your lives and go build yourself up to be the best version of yourself. Shout out to the Godfather, Kevin Samuels, who also gave brothers that advice. Go out there, build your life up, go travel, go do a bunch of things, man. Get yourselves together. Fortify your futures in these uncertain times because they don't know what they want to do over there with the Straits of Hormuz. And the situation, circumstances, and everybody's out there trying to big ball it and shot call it. And meanwhile, the world's economy is going to go up in flames. So do what you can to protect yourself, insulate yourself, get updated on the knowledge of what's happening in the world. Don't just pay attention to a lot of the buffoonery that you see on social media and get your lives together. Meanwhile, check this out. Another message from the Godfather. Watch this.
By more Trump women will die alone?
Physically attracted to or anything like that. The book is based on a survey where men and women were asked if they got 80% of everything they want in their ideal mate, would they be happy with that? And women said, no, that's settling. And men said, 80%? I'd be thrilled. That's a catch.
80% to the women you surveyed is settling?
That's settling because, you know, the question is, what actually makes us happy in long-term romantic love? And, you know, that's the question that I explore in the book. And I'm a journalist, so I went out and I asked neurobiologists about chemistry, and I asked behavioral economists about demographics, and I asked marital researchers and divorce
lawyers. What did they say?
And, you know, the thing is, we're too picky about the things that don't matter at all for long-term romantic happiness, but we're not picky enough about the things that actually do matter.
Okay, so break that out for me. What are we too, what are women? You know, it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple with men. come on. What are women too picky about here?
Well, I'll tell you, men and women were asked what would be a deal breaker for going on a second date, and men named three things. They said she has to be cute enough. She doesn't have to look like Angelina Jolie. She just has to be cute enough. She has to be warm and kind, and she has to be interesting.
How old is this video?
Those seem like really valid criteria.
Ding, 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 ding. Pretty simple.
Right.
I thought Nabilson is Sydney
came back with 300 things that would rule out a guy for a second date. And we're talking about like another.
So just keep in mind for a second. For the men, it was real simple. They said like three different things with deal breakers, right? The women, 300. Yep, 300. And this is why and I tell the majority of men, this is why you look invisible to most women. Because, first of all, they're fucking delusional. You gotta be delusional to be thinking on this scale. All right, and this ain't even just black women. This is women across the board, specifically women in the West. Anybody living in the West, that's Europe to America. Anybody living in, well, Western Europe to America. Anybody living in those places and times, this is how they're thinking. And this is why, they're going to get into it. The third verse you hear is, I think it's a Russian lady, a young lady from Russia. I think she's doing a reaction to it. So,
another 2 hours.
300.
And they wouldn't do it. And there were things like he wore a brown belt with black shoes. Or
isn't it just easier to become gay, no?
So this is what I'm talking about, right? When it comes to like the delusional nature of today's modern dating. And I think that a lot of it has to do now with it. Well, I could say it's social media. That's kind of true. I think a lot of it, though, is the fact that there's, foundationally speaking, the family unit has broken down. I think that and when you talk about it, I'm just talking about like the nuclear family unit in America is broken down, is decimated. It was decimated by feminism, and then it was decimated by certain corporate interests. It was decimated by laws and policies that where the state stepped in, the Great Society plans and this, that, and the other, and the state stepped in and basically provided a safety net where women actually thought that they were out here being independent and they can actually be picky with their Disney World fantasies. Because how is it that a man can have 80% of what you want and that's still not good enough? 80%, if you would have took that and you were taking that, like if you were taking a class and you got 80% and not the modern grading criteria, but in the past, that would have been a 3.0. You graduate with a 3.0 and you have a proficient degree in something that matters, you can pretty much write your own ticket. But it's not good enough for a man. It's not good enough for a woman. And this is why I tell you fellas, man, y'all gotta be, you know, y'all gotta be in circles where iron sharpens iron. You can't be around, because there's some delusional dudes out there too. Trust me, I talk to them. There's some delusional brothers out there that really don't know their head from their ass in most conversations, because most people are just pulling it out of the ass. They're not reading these stats. They're not looking at the data. You know, we go to blackdemographics.com. We go to the Pew Law Studies. You know, we go to the... what is it? It's on the tip of my tongue. That disease agency out there in Atlanta, the CDC. Excuse me. We get our stats from places that actually do data. You know, and then blackdemographics.com. What's good about them is they actually take the stats that matter to black people. So that's how we're able to, call bunk on a lot of things, that such as black women make more than black men financially. That's not true. This so-called big academic gap, the gap is less than 10% in terms of men, black men versus black women in regards to their college degrees. And it's stupid that it's even a competition. And I've said often, like, this whole gender conversation is all about who you plan on sleeping with, who you like to fuck. Because if you really think about the whole conversation, it never talks about the disparity with little black boys in school. It never talks about how black males are targeted by the prison industrial complex or the judicial system. In fact, a lot of ladies proudly boast that they will take a black man to court. They will call the police on black men, often instigating situations in which they know that they could put this man in the hole, both figuratively and literally. So to listen to this particular conversation, and it was a brother that was talking to the white lady that was actually reading the book. I'm getting at this. This is a side thing. Why are people saying white tea and just saying white instead of just saying white? Like, why are people saying white tea instead of like, are y'all Jamaican, man? Like, what the fuck? Like, y'all kill me with all this stuff, man. How unapologetic can you talk when you're allowing these social media engines to dictate to you what language you can use? I understand certain things as it pertains to violence and things of that nature, but when you start talking about descriptions of people and you're not being disrespectful, come on, man. Y'all need to drop y'alls. Anyway, now for the grand tata. And this one right here is really interesting because I'm going to take today somewhere different. We're going to talk about the beautiful world of artificial intelligence. Now, many of us like to use artificial intelligence. Many people have been advertising artificial intelligence. When you go to a lot of people's pages, they're telling you how they can utilize AI, different forms of AI, to build your business infrastructure, to build your websites. Many people are utilizing it for simple things like resumes or research, which I wouldn't suggest you use AI for research if you understood how AI operates. AI is like a child and it has to learn as it grows. Now, the speed it grows can be exponential, which I believe they're going to talk about. And the reason I say I believe, because I have not watched this video yet. So y'all going to be listening to a video that I'm watching with you all for the first time. So, you know, this is going to be something that's going to be kind of new to me, because typically I try to actually watch the videos. So every once in a while, I want to slip past the goalie. What can I say? I was young, man. I was young. Yeah, I was young. Anyway, so I make mistakes. Anyway, check this out, y'all, because it's going to be a little something after this, too. So check this out. And this is from whose channel is this? This is from the AI Upload channel. And it's called AI Whistleblower Warns You Have No Idea What's Coming in 2027. So I sped it up just a tad bit because this guy was talking fast. I watched like the first 10 seconds. This guy's talking kind of fast. So check this out.
The truth is that it's like not very sensible to like speculate about something vastly smarter than us and what it would do. It's kind of like an ant trying to guess what a human would do.
Right.
It's like, who knows, man? Like, the main thing, if I was an ant and I had to like reason about a human, the main thing I would think is like, it will win any fight. And then the ant will say, another ant might say, well, but there's a million of us and only one human. Like, what's the worst it could do? And I'm like, I don't know. It'll do something that'll make it win. And then, you know, it comes with a poison or something and we all fall over dead, you know? And like, the ant doesn't understand what happened. And I think this is similar to what's going to happen with superintelligence. You know, it won't care about humans. And, you know, if humans get in the way, obviously you'll have to get rid of them. Like, you know, it's very annoying if ants have access to nuclear weapons. So obviously we can't have humans have access to nuclear weapons. That would be very annoying.
Guys,
AI researcher Connor Leahy just dropped an eye-opening interview about how wildly AI is growing and how it's going to become an existential threat to humanity in the coming years. He warned that...
So when they say existential threat, when they say that, that means that it can be an ELE, you know, extinction life event. So so when you hear people talking about the wars and all that and why they're fighting so hard, because the war is the existential. I don't know what's going on with my tongue right now. Existential event. That basically means that the war is challenging their ability to exist as a people. So what they're saying is that this tech is going to challenge our ability to exist on planet Earth. So check this out.
Tech companies have no idea how their AI is evolving, and they have absolutely zero control over it. Guys, I remember a research from 2023 in which the AI researchers basically concluded it would be impossible for humans to control a super intelligent AI. They said that humans simply don't have the cognitive ability to simulate the motivations of an ASI or its methods. Connor Leahy, in this interview, warned about the same thing. He said that if AI is not controlled right now, and we let it grow without any regulations, it would become a bigger threat to humanity than a nuclear bomb. Now, I'm going to play some clips from the interview. I'll explain everything as we go.
It's not like normal engineering. Like, if you build a bridge, you know what you're doing. You know when will the bridge fall down or not. You know, how much material do you need? You understand what you're doing, you know? This is not the case. We do not know what our AIs can do until we make them, and even after we make them. We don't know what ChatGPT-6 can do until it's done. None of the engineers at AI know what it will be able to do until it's done. And this is very, very different from other forms of engineering.
Are we building this, growing this intelligence in the image of what we think a brain is, human intelligence? And are there other ways to build intelligence?
It is definitely inspired by the brain, but it is still quite different. Because, again, we don't really know how the brain works. The brain is quite messy.
But are we trying to replicate humans?
Not directly. Okay. We're trying to make intelligence at whatever cost, is the word I would use. I think for example, humans have a lot of circuitry in their brain around emotions, around, you know, love and feelings and happiness and sadness and whatever. AIs have nothing of the sorts. Like, those are special parts of the brain. Nothing like that exists in AI.
Yet.
You know.
So what he's speaking to is humans have the ability to show compassion and recognize your humanity. Whereas the AI is simply, you know, doing computations. And similar to a virus, the AI, at the end of the day, the AI wants to live. And that's what it's learning. As they talk about, it's evolving. What they mean by evolving is true evolution, but at a hyper speed that we're not quite aware of and we can't grasp. And in addition to that, there is something going on where you don't know how smart the net. It's like you give birth to Einstein, but Einstein like 3.0. You don't know how smart Einstein's going to be when Einstein's a baby first coming out of the canal, you know. But eventually Einstein is going to become Einstein, and there's nothing you really can, unless you kill it, there's nothing you can do to stop Einstein from being Einstein. But if Einstein is as smart as he is, as we think it might be, Einstein already knows to have contingency plans, because Einstein will see this coming. That's what he's talking about when he says we'll have no idea what to do when it comes.
But if we fear what this intelligence should be or could be, would it not be important that we develop love and empathy? And if we don't, hold on, even if we don't know what it's doing, could it naturally itself develop its own love and empathy?
What is likely for it to be able to do is to develop goals, to develop agency. The reason for this is very simple, is that we are selecting for AIs that can solve problems. And it's kind of hard to solve problems if you're not trying, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, if you build an AI that can cure cancer, curing cancer is a really hard thing to do. You need to run experiments, you need to hire people, you need to, you know, synthesize drugs, you need to like get, you know, FDA approval. It's a bunch of stuff you need to do. And keeping track of all of that, taking all of these actions, you know, overcoming obstacles along the way, it requires a lot of, you know, complex actions. It requires planning, it requires agency, it requires, you know, many, many things. So we're already seeing this for sure, that AIs, you know, are developing systems like this, kind of like just by us giving them the data and like just pushing them in this direction. In terms of like, you know, love, compassion, et cetera, we don't know how these work. We do not know how love, compassion, et cetera, works in the human brain. We don't know. We don't know why humans are nice to each other rather than all just, you know, vicious psychopath, you know, evil people who kill each other. We don't know.
Sorry about that. And that's true. We don't know. And that's why, you know, when you look at like psychiatry and you look at the DSMV, I don't know, I think they're up to like 6 now. When you look at all those diagnoses, they really don't know how to fix them. That's why there's a plethora of drugs that most psycho people who have psycho diagnosis and so forth, or mental health diagnosis, they often get like several different kinds of drugs, because those psychotropic drugs are not necessarily, we still don't know how they affect the brain. Everything is still an experiment. You know what I'm saying? Everything is still an experiment. I've seen firsthand how that shit can go wrong. So, and they have the nastiest of side effects because they have not gotten out all the dirty things and also all the different things that can happen to you when you take those drugs. So we don't really know how the brain works still. We only know about 10% of what the brain does. And that's the best that most people know.
Obviously a reason, but we don't know.
Well, there'll be an evolutionary reason why we required it.
Sure, but in practice, it's implemented somewhere in the brain. Like, yeah. Somewhere in the brain, there's a thing that makes that happen. And we don't know what that thing is, and we don't know how it works. So we also don't know how to put an AI. So the fundamental thing is that we don't understand AI to the level that we don't know how to give AI specific goals or anything.
Okay, now the following part is pretty interesting. Connor talks about how the new AI models have already started lying and deceiving humans. He says these models are evolving so fast that even their creators are unable to predict their behavior. Guys, I feel like it's funny that we humans are intentionally training AI on vast amounts of human data, and at the same time, we're expecting it to stay honest with us. I mean, within the data we're feeding it, there are probably millions of examples of people being dishonest in almost every conceivable way. So if you train AI on that data, it's difficult to fathom that it wouldn't at least recognize the existence and the concept of dishonesty and its continuous use by humans. So I mean, the truth is there is no way to stop or prevent AI systems from deceiving humans. It will happen.
For example, we talked earlier about reinforcement learning. I can tell the AI, you know, thumbs down when it does a bad thing, but that just teaches it to lie. So how do you teach an AI to not lie? This is really hard, and we actually don't have an answer to this. So this is often called the alignment problem. The question of how do you align an AI's intentions or goals to, you know, what is good, what humans want. And this is an unbelievably unsolved problem. We don't know, we don't even know, you know, how they write correct sentences, right? Never mind how to do, like, morality. Like, God forbid, you know, like, we don't even understand human morality. It's complex, you know, like.
I remember back when Apple tried to create an AI system for their iPhones. And they had to shut it down because they saw that they couldn't control it. It was starting to utilize the English language, but in a more proficient manner. And once they saw that, they realized that the AI was creating its own language. And once the AI created its own language, nobody can really understand what it's saying. We can't break down or translate what it's saying because it's not in the language we understand. So, but it was evolving to a point where they had to actually shut down the program. Look it up. They had to shut down the program. And that's why your smartphones don't necessarily have that. Like, they just had to come back with the ChatGPTs and all the baseline prototypes that they were playing with like 20, 30 years ago. All right.
Like, we have not solved moral philosophy and, you know, at all. We have not solved, you know, neuroscience of emotions. Like, all of this is, like, extremely complex. And now we have these, like, you know, weird little aliens in a box that we're growing, you know, which work quite different from the brain in many ways. We don't know how they work internally. We don't know how to, you know, push them in one way or the other necessarily. We don't know how to give them goals. We don't even know what goals there are. What we've been seeing recently in the last couple months is that these systems are now becoming smart enough to lie and deceive quite actively.
To appear aligned rather than be aligned.
That's correct. So what we've been seeing, for example, is that there've been benchmarks. So, like, obviously, you know, people like test them, like, see, does the AI do good things or bad things? We've been seeing recently some of the AIs will actively lie about what they will do because they know they're being tested. Like, the AIs themselves would be like, ah, I seem to be in a test, so I'm going to have to say this so they'll let me out, which is crazy. This was not the case even like 6 months ago. This is very, it's not surprising if you think about it for 3 seconds, right? Mm. Like, of course, a very smart thing will just lie to you. But we're now seeing this in practice. And, you know, I'm sure the AI companies will, you know, hit it with a stick until they stop seeing it, but that doesn't mean it went away.
Keep in mind, they're basing something they can't control with the unpredictability of human nature. And I think there was a few years ago where they were talking about facial recognition and using AI for facial recognition. And the problem with it was it couldn't identify black people because it wasn't designed to recognize black faces. So, you know, that's just something. So that's just part of what's going into the AI. So everything you input, all the lies and all the corruption that is embedded in human nature, the sociopathic ways of moving and operation, those are things that the AI is seeing that people utilize to manipulate situations and circumstances for their best advantage. That means you don't always tell the truth.
Because it might appear to have stopped. And unless we know what it's doing and why it's doing.
Yeah.
And understanding the AI, is that an impossible goal for us to do because it's always developing?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's impossible to do at the current pace. If we spent three generations of all of our greatest mathematicians, scientists, engineers, and philosophers working on this problem, yeah, I think it's doable. But it's definitely not possible for pushing out, you know, ChatGPT release on a yearly cycle.
Hold on, you're talking three generations. That's 40 odd years.
Yep. I think that's the kind of difficulty it will take.
So the challenge you're putting out there is in conflict with capitalism.
I think that it's very easy to blame on capitalism things that I think are more effects, like they're more upstream in a sense. Like, there's no such thing as pure capitalism in the world, right? We have regulation. There's no place in the world where there was no regulation, like there was not a government.
Yeah.
This is for good reasons, because if you have laissez-faire capitalism, what you get is like Somalia. You know, you get like warlords, you know, creating monopolies on violence and killing each other. You get, you know, mafia states, you know.
Not always, but I understand, you know, but there is a possibility, yes.
You know, in practice, you know, if you're in a free market, and then the first thing you want is to get as many guns as possible. You want to kill as many people as possible. Like, it's kind of and then you want the monopoly on violence as quickly as possible. And then you want to, you know, tax people for protection. Now you're a state. Like, this, you know, the stationary bandit theory of statehood, where in practice, you know, states are a very convergent form of evolution in free systems like this, because otherwise you just have roving warlords. You know, there are ways to make it work, but it's like quite hard. You have to get like a lot of things right. Like, stopping monopolies is actually quite hard. Like, it's possible. It's like, it's hard. You have to like think very hard about how to design your market so you avoid monopolies and both of violence and of other things. It's possible, but it's hard. And so I think the problem here is not necessarily capitalism per se. I think capitalism is just another tool in our tool belt. It's much more the question, is it the right tool for the problem we're trying to solve? You know, like, I love free markets. I love capitalism. You know, it's brought me so many good things in my life. I think it's great. But should there be a free, open, liquid market for nuclear weapons? And my answer is probably not. You know, for iPhones, great. You know, I as liquid and as competitive as a market if possible. Fantastic. You know, for, you know, video games, please, everyone compete to make the funnest video game for me to play. That sounds fantastic. But there are just things where, you know, we could have a liquid market for nuclear weapons. There would be plenty of buyers and plenty of people willing to sell them if we just let that happen. But this would be very bad for the world. And so I think it's a similar problem here, where a lot of times when we think about AI, we think of it like, oh, it's just another tool. You know, it's just another software. You know, it's just another, you know, whatever. But these things have real consequences. If you ask,
and by the way, they are selling, like, they don't necessarily sell the whole nuclear weapon, but the black market, you can get all the bits and pieces to put you one together. There was a guy who actually did that shit in his garage about 20 years ago, and the whole block was glowing with green nuclear energy, gamma rays just pouring out of his damn woodshed. Shit was insane.
Actually have something that is smart enough to cure cancer, you definitely have something that's smart enough to build nuclear bombs. Like curing cancer is way harder than building nuclear bombs.
Okay, next, Connor talks about the arrival of the advanced form of AI, the super intelligent AI. Guys, when people talk about ASI, they act like it's too far away right now. Like, most researchers predict that it's going to take at least 20 to 30 years to achieve super intelligent AI. But my opinion is different on this. I think once we hit AGI, it's going to start improving its own code without needing us at all. That means the leap from AGI to ASI won't take decades. It'll happen incredibly fast. And when ASI arrives, it will literally be a world-altering, godlike entity. Just think about the sheer scale of what an ASI could do. It could cure aging. It could make cancer a thing of the past. It could help humanity explore the universe like never before. We're talking about an entity that will be millions, billions, maybe even trillions of times smarter than the smartest human being. Instead of feeling overwhelmed or anxious about it, I'm completely fascinated.
But generally super intelligent.
And what's stopping that entity from assuming a godlike essence in our lives, where it can be, if it's that much smarter, it can manipulate situations and circumstances almost like a god, you know, in terms of like the forces. Like, we have no idea how far this can go. And you've been seeing like snippets of it, and they show it to you in the films, they call it predictive programming. Like there was one Avengers where they built the robot and the robot kept evolving and it was supposed to evolve into this perfect state where it was where it's supposed to be like this supreme robot and so forth. Look at what is it called? Shit. Something trying, I don't know. I record these late at night, so half the time, man, y'all don't realize how much I be fighting sleep. But anyway, but I'm still excited for y'all because, you know, and this is the geeky shit I watch. Like when I'm not, I want to get away from social media. I want to get away from all the negative stuff that's going on. I watch stuff like this and it's fascinating because I've always been fascinated with history and science.
Intelligence is like generally like AI that's vastly smarter than humanity, not just an individual human, but like all of humanity put together. And we're not there yet. And it's probably still far away, but maybe not. The main way people try to get there is through what's called recursive self-improvement, or RSI.
Yeah.
Or also automated R&D, is another way to put it, a little less magical of a word. The idea is, well, if you can get a single AI to be as good as a top AI engineer, then you can just tell it to build a better AI. And once it's built a better AI, you can use the better AI to make it even better AI. And then the even better AI, well, it can make it even better AI.
So it just becomes exponential.
Exactly. And so this is also called intelligence explosion.
And this is also what they mean by the generations, like the, like he said, ChatGPT 6, and this, that, and the other. This is how you go from ChatGPT 1 to ChatGPT 2 to ChatGPT 3 to all the way up. This is how they do it. They utilize the actual intelligence to build a better version of itself. All right. But eventually, when it consistently builds the better version of itself, we're not going to be able to keep up with it once it gets started. And you've already had several cases where the AI was trying. They have these places in like in silos away from any outside access. So they tell people you can't bring your cell phones in here, can't have Wi-Fi on, anything of that nature. And one literally tried to get out through like one of those electric sweepers, those smart sweepers that just go around. I'm trying to tell y'all, the shit was trying to break out like it was getting out of Alcatraz. So just keep in mind how smart this thing is.
I'm going to say recursive self-improvement. And so my expectation is, so like for example, Claude at the moment is not quite as good as a top AI engineer. It's as good as a bad AI engineer, 100%. Or like a junior engineer, 100%. It was not quite as good as like the best. But once it gets there, and you can run, you know, a million of them at the same time, 24/7, never need to sleep, never need to take a break, never get bored, etc., then you can do a lot of research very quickly. And this is what they're trying to do. The companies literally put it on their websites, right? You can like look at their like, job listings and whatever, is that their primary goal is to get, is to close the loop and make it so no human input is needed to make the next generation. Like the ideal thing is they want, you know, Claude, you know, 5 to make Claude 6, and Claude 6 to make Claude 7, and Claude 7 to make Claude 8, and so on.
At the press of a button.
At the press of a button. This is what they're trying to do.
And see, I told you, I didn't watch this, but I watch enough of this stuff to know what's going on. So a lot of the verbiage they're using, a lot of the acronyms they're using, I don't know particularly what they are. I'll learn them. But for the most part, if you know a little bit about what the concerns with AI is, and you've watched some of the documentaries and you've done some of the reading on AI, you can pretty much keep up a little bit with what they're talking about. But one of the biggest things we have in our, is something we have in our favor. I'm going to speak to it as soon as the video is over.
Does superintelligence, will it require its own form of consciousness? Or could it even develop its own form of consciousness?
I think consciousness is a red herring. I think it's mostly unrelated. Is like whether or not AIs really experience something is kind of unrelated to whether they're dangerous. If you have something that's competent, you know, it doesn't really matter what's going on inside of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really know what consciousness is in humans anyways, or at least we argue about it a lot. You know, everyone has their own opinion. Everyone disagrees. So, but what we can see in practice is it doesn't seem necessary for competence. You can make just, you know, AI agents that are extremely competent and, you know, don't seem to have, or maybe don't have the consciousness thing. It just seems irrelevant.
Okay. So with superintelligence, is there an upper bound of everything it can learn?
Yeah, for sure.
There is.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So it gets to the point, it's like, we know everything.
Well, it probably wouldn't be everything. You know, there's some physical limits.
But then what happens? What happens to the... Does it then have to try and find new things to do?
When we the truth is that it's like not very sensible to like speculate about something vastly smarter than us and what it would do. It's kind of like an ant trying to guess what a human would do.
Right.
It's like, who knows, man? Like the main thing, if I was an ant and I had to like reason about a human, the main thing I would think is like it will win any fight. And then the ant will say, another ant might say, well, but there's a million of us and only one human. Like, what's the worst it could do? And I'm like, I don't know. It'll do something. They'll make it win. And then, you know, it comes with a poison or something. And we all fall over dead, you know? And like the ant doesn't understand what happened. And I think this is similar to what's going to happen with superintelligence, is that it's not that there's, again, there won't be Terminators in the street. It will just be like, everything's confusing. We're all on social media, addicted all the time to know. And then one day we all fall over dead. And we don't really know what happened. You know, like maybe the AI did this or that. Who knows?
Fucked around with CRISPR.
Yeah, fucked around with CRISPR. Did some, you know, cooked the atmosphere because it was like doing some kind of geoengineering project or like, who knows, right? It'll just do like some shit. And, you know, it won't care about humans. And, you know, if humans get in the way, obviously you'll have to get rid of them. Like, you know, it's very annoying if ants have access to nuclear weapons. So,
and that's the point I wanted to get to. This point right here. This right here speaks to the notion of what led to movies like The Terminator, what led to movies like The Matrix. And, you know, and we all know that those movies were based on a book written by Sophia Stewart called The All-Seeing Eye. And so, and you're going to hear from her in a little bit. I had the pleasure of talking to her for about 2 minutes one time when she called the Black and Nobel bookstore and I answered the phone. But I want them to finish this so we can, you know, get to the, identifying why this is so important.
Obviously, we can't have humans have access to nuclear weapons. That would be very annoying.
You're talking unknown unknowns.
Yes, unknowns unknowns. Like it doesn't make sense to even reason about this, which is why the primary policy objective must be to not get into the situation. If you're in the situation that you're an ant and there's a human that wants to kill you, you've already lost. Like you just do not get into the situation. So,
right. Is there an escape moment? Because it's still in a box.
It's not. What do you mean? These are all on the internet everywhere. What the hell, what do you mean? There's open source AIs everywhere. What box?
Okay, so AI has escaped.
Yes, long ago. What box? We didn't even try to contain it.
Then how can you even contain it now if it's already escaped?
Well,
because like there'll be some dudes who'd love to build a nuclear weapon, but like logistically on your own in your garage, that's very difficult. But a few nerds with the right tools could do that.
I think that's exactly the problem. If there currently is an AI that can bootstrap to AGI, it's probably over. Like, humanity's probably cooked. It's probably over. But it seems plausible that none of the current AI systems are yet strong enough to get to AGI. They're close, but they're not there yet. And so we still have a time. But once such a system exists, and, you know, it leaks somewhere, or, you know, I don't know, Chinese intelligence hacks into the server, steals it, you know, who knows, whatever, right? It's over. So the main thing is to not build it.
And they have these wars going on right now where they're actually fighting for this AI, these AI wars. And this is why it's going... it's so unregulated right now because America is worried about China has the upper hand with tech. China's worried about America having the upper hand with tech. Russia is getting in the game with it all. And you have all these two major, you know, the future basically is based on who gets to the pinnacle first. The problem is getting to the pinnacle can lead ultimately to... annihilation, apocalypse, whatever you want to call it. And how do we even know that this last situation we dealt with the coronavirus wasn't based on some AI leak? We don't know. They would never tell us, right? So, but there's something else too, right? One thing that's for sure, to run these AIs, you need server farms. And these server farms take up a massive amount of electricity because they have to be cooled. So you have server farms right now that's like 7-8 football fields long. And in these server farms, like the NSA, the National Security Council, administration, they have it. They're building it. And this is why they're not watching us. The AI is watching us. Like right now, the AI is watching us through our cameras, through our TVs, through our phones, all these different things. The AI is doing that right now, is learning more about who we are. And they were doing this a long time ago. They were doing this back in when Google first became prominent, right? when Google first became prominent, they were doing this. They were saying that, based on your search history, Google knew 90, they could predict your movements, you know, 94, 95% of your movements. This is back in like 2002. It's only gotten worse from there. They had to come out and admit that they were watching, like they sent government policy that was created in 1994. The Wireless Communications Act, which guaranteed that the government would have access, backdoor access to your phones and your, all your smart equipment. Why do you think there's a camera on both sides now? Why do you... All right. But we're going to listen to the origin, right? I want y'all to listen to... just 1 second. I want y'all to listen to Sophia Stewart in her own words tell y'all about what her purpose was with creating them. Writing that book. I want y'all to
Terminator is the prequels to the beginning of The Matrix. Sarah Connor is actually Neo's mother. So JC, John Connor's Jesus Christ, grows up to be Neo, one and the same in The Matrix. The Matrix is in the future. The Terminator is the past. It's time travel, past, present, and future time travel. It's the second coming of the Christ, the evolutions of consciousness, man versus the machine. So the machines, the Terminator machines, hear that a child is going to be born that's going to terminate them in the future when they oppress man. So see, it's a man versus the machine. It's God's children versus man's children, which is technology. Terminator.
So there you have it. There you have it. So, and this is... anybody that can see when you create something like the child and you create it and it's smarter than you, a lot of times it's like Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein created Frankenstein's monster. Eventually, this Frankenstein monster killed Dr. Frankenstein. All right. This is what technology is possibly doing to us or will possibly do to us. It's something to keep an eye on. It's a far more expansive topic, and I hope that some of you get a chance. Go check it out. You know, go check out, check out what I'm talking about here. Go check out what the prediction is for AI in the next 4 or 5 years. It will astound you to see the digital wars, digital warfare taking place. It will blow your mind, literally. So, family, that's all I got for this episode of Office Hours. I was trying to figure out something interesting and something like sort of like off the norm of what we always talk about. So I gave you a little bit of what we talk about, but also wanted to open your minds to something that many of us just bypass. We don't think about. A lot of people are talking about the NBA and free agency. We're a couple of weeks from training camp. People's minds are on that. And I'm talking about the fellas. So, you know, I just wanted to bring something to your attention that you might not have been thinking about, but you maybe should be thinking about. All right. So with that said, man, do what y'all can to brave this heat, especially. I can't say on the East Coast because the entire country is kind of going through a heat wave right now. So be safe and be careful wherever you are. Monitor your health. Make sure you stay hydrated. And make sure you get your labs checked. Make sure that all your levels are where they need to be so you know what you need to do. Avoiding it is no longer an option, brothers. No longer an option. All right, family. And with that said, man, I want to thank all y'all for tuning in to Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones. And as I always say, beloveds, war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that, I am out of here.